Osho, the grass grows by itself. Talks on Zen, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 5.
Bhagwan, there was a monk who called himself the Master of Silence. Actually, he was a fraud and had no genuine understanding. To sell his humbug Zen, he had 2 eloquent attendant monks to answer questions for him. But, as if to show his inscrutable silent Zen, he himself never uttered a word. One day, during the absence of his 2 attendants, a pilgrim came to him and asked, "Master, what is the Buddha?" Not knowing what to do, or how to answer, he looked desperately around in all directions for his missing mouthpieces. The pilgrim, apparently pleased and satisfied, thanked the master and set out again on his journey. On the road, the pilgrim met the 2 attendant monks on their way home. He began telling them enthusiastically what an enlightened being this Master of Silence is. He said, "I asked him what Buddha is, and he immediately turned his face to the east and to the west, implying that human beings are always looking for Buddha here and there, but actually Buddha is not to be found in any such directions. Oh, what an enlightened master he is, and how profound his teaching." When the attendant monks returned, the Master of Silence scolded them thus, "Where have you been all this time? A while ago I was embarrassed to death and almost ruined by an inquisitive pilgrim."
Life is a mystery. The more you understand it, the more mysterious it becomes. The more you know, the less you feel that you know. The more you become aware of the depth, the infinite depth, the more it becomes almost impossible to say anything about it. Hence silence. A man who knows remains in such a such infinite wonderment that even breathing stops. Standing before the mystery of life, one is lost completely. But there are problems. And the first problem with the mystery of life is that there is always possibility for frauds. People who can deceive others, people who can cheat. In the world of science, that is not possible. Science moves on a plain ground with infinite caution, logical, rational. If you utter something nonsense, immediately you will be caught. Because whatsoever you say can be verified. Science is objective, and any assertion, any statement can be verified in experiments, in the laboratories. With religion, everything is inner, subjective, mysterious, and the path is not plain. It is a hilly track, many ups and many downs, and the path moves like a spiral. Again and again you come to the same place, maybe a little higher. And whatsoever you say cannot be verified. There is no criterion of verification. Because it is inner, no experiment can prove it or disprove it. And because it is mysterious, no logical argumentation can decide this way or that. That's why science is one, and there are just almost 3,000 religions in the world. You cannot prove any religion false, neither you can prove any other religion to be true and authentic. That is not possible, because no empirical test is possible. A Buddha says there is no self inside. How to prove this or how to disprove this? If somebody says, I have seen God, and he sounds sincere, what to do? He may be a deluded lunatic. He may have seen a hallucination. Or he may really have seen the reality of existence. But how to prove or disprove? And he cannot share his experience with anybody. It is inner. It is not like an object you can place in the middle and everybody can watch it and everybody can experiment and dissect it. You have to take it in faith. He may sound absolutely sincere and may be deluded, and he may not be cheating you, trying to cheat you. He may be himself deceived. He may be a very true person, but he has seen a dream and thinks it is real. And sometimes dreams have the quality that they look more real than the reality itself. Then dreams look like visions. He has heard the voice of God, and he is so filled with it, so thrilled. But what to do? How to prove it, that he has not gone mad? He has not projected his own mind and idea. No possibility. If there is a one genuine religious man, there are 99 with him all around. Few of them deluded. Poor, simple fellows. Good at heart. Not trying to harm anybody. But still, they harm. And then there are few cheats, robbers, deceivers, cunning, clever people. Who are knowingly doing harm, but the harm pays. You cannot find a better business in the world than religion. You can promise, and there is no need to deliver the goods, because goods are invisible. I have heard an anecdote that in America they have invented invisible hairpins for the ladies. One lady was purchasing at a supermarket, and the salesman has given her a package of invisible hairpins. She looked in the box. She couldn't see. Of course, they were invisible. How can you see? So she said, "But I don't see anything in it." The man said, "They are invisible, so how you can see?" So the lady asked, "Really, are they invisible?" The man said, "You are asking me? For 7 days we have been out of stock, and still we are selling. They are absolutely invisible." When things are invisible, you can go on selling, promising. There is no need to deliver the goods, because in the first place they are invisible, so nobody can ever detect. And you cannot find a better business than religion, because goods are invisible. I have seen many people being deceived, many people deceiving. And the thing is so subtle that nothing can be said against our far. For example, I know a man who is a simple, plain, stupid man. But stupidity has its own qualities. Particularly in religion, a stupid man can look like a Paramahansa. Because he is stupid, his behavior is unexpected, just like an enlightened man. The similarity is there. Because he is stupid, he cannot utter a single rational statement, just like an enlightened man. He is foolish, he doesn't know what he is saying, how he is behaving. Suddenly he can do anything. And this sudden doing seems to be as if he belongs to another world. He has epileptic fits, but people think he is going in samadhi. He needs electric shock treatment. Suddenly he will go in a fit and swoon. And the followers will beat the drums and they will sing the glory of God, and their master has gone into great samadhi, ecstasy. And his mouth starts foaming and his saliva flowing out. He's simply in a fit. He has no intelligence, but that is a quality. And then there are deceivers around him who go on spreading things about the Baba. And many things happen near him. That is the miracle. Many things happen because many things happen on their own accord. The Baba is in a swoon, and many people will feel their kundali rising. They are projecting. And there is a certain phenomena, if you sit quietly for a long period, the body accumulates energy, and then the body starts moving, feeling restless, sudden jerks start coming. They think this is kundalini. Kundalini is rising. And when it rises in one person, how you can lag behind? Then others start. Then it is just like one person goes to the toilet, then others feel the urge. One person sneezes, and others have a tremendous sneeze coming to them. It becomes infectious. And when so many things are happening, the Baba must be in samadhi. He is simply in a fit. in the East. This has been my observation, that only one genuine personage, his 99 are false, either themselves deceived, simple poor people, are deceivers, cunning, clever people. And this can go on, because the whole phenomena is invisible. What to do? How to judge? And how to decide? Religion is always dangerous. It is dangerous because the very terrain is mysterious, irrational. Anything goes. And there is no outer way to judge it. And there are people then, with their gullible minds, always ready to believe something. Because they need some foothold. Without belief, they feel unanchored, uprooted. They need somebody to believe in. They need somewhere to go and feel anchored and rooted. Belief is a deep need in people. Why it is a deep need? Because without belief you feel like a chaos. Without belief you don't know why you exist. Without belief you cannot feel any meaning in life. No significance seems to be there. You feel like an accident, for no reason at all to be here. Without belief the question arises, why you are, who you are, from where you are coming, where are you going? And not a single answer is there. Without belief there is no answer. One feels simply without any meaning, an accident into existence, not needed at all, not indispensable. You will die and nobody will bother, the whole will continue. You feel something is lacking, a contact with reality, a certain belief. That's why religions exist, to supply beliefs, because people need them. A person without belief has to be very, very courageous. To live without belief is to live in the unknown. To live without belief is a great daring. Ordinary people cannot afford that. Too much daring. Anguish comes in. Anxiety is created. And this has to be noted, that to me a real religious person is without belief. Trust he has, but not belief. And there is a vast difference between the two. Belief is intellectual. You need it, that's why you have it. It is because you cannot live without belief. Belief gives you a support to live. It gives you a certain meaning, however false. It gives you a certain blueprint for the life. How to move, where to move. you are on the highway, not lost in a forest. And belief gives you a community. Other believers just like you. You become a part of a crowd. Then you need not think on your own. Then you are no more responsible for your own being and what you are doing. Now you throw the responsibility on the crowd. An individual Hindu is never so bad as a Hindu crowd. An individual Mohammedan is never so bad as a Mohammedan crowd. What happens? Individuals are not bad. Crowds are simply mad. Because in a crowd, nobody feels responsible. You can commit murders in a crowd easily. Because you know the crowd is doing it. You are just a wave in it. You are not the deciding factor. So you are not responsible. Individual, alone, you feel a responsibility. You will feel guilty if you commit something. This is my observation, that sin exists through crowds. No individual is ever a sinner. And individuals, even if they commit something wrong, can be taken out of it very easily. But crowds are impossible. Because crowds have no souls, no centers, whom to appeal. And all that goes in the world, the devil, the evil forces, in fact, crowd is the devil. Nations are the devil. Religious communities are the evil forces. Belief makes you a part of a bigger crowd than you. And there is a feeling of elation when you are part of something bigger. A nation, India, or America, or England. A nation, India, or America, or England. Then you are not a tiny human being. A great energy comes to you. You feel elated. A euphoria is felt. That's why whenever a country is in war, people feel very euphoric, ecstatic. Suddenly their life has a meaning. They exist for the country, for the religion, for the civilization. Now they have a certain goal to be achieved and certain treasure to be protected. Now they are no more ordinary people. They have a great mission. Belief is the bridge from the individual to the crowd. Trust is totally different. Trust is not an intellectual concept. Trust is a quality of the heart, not of the head. Belief is a bridge between the individual and the crowd, and trust is a bridge between the individual and the cosmos. Trust is always in God. And when I say God, I don't mean any belief in God. When I say God, I simply mean the whole. Trust is a deep understanding that you are simply a part, a note in a great symphony. Just a small wave in the ocean. Trust means you have to follow the whole, flow with the whole, in accord with the whole. Trust means that I am not here as an enemy. I'm not here to fight. I'm here to enjoy the opportunity that has been given to me. I'm here to be grateful and celebrating. Trust is not in a doctrine. You need not be a Hindu. You need not be a Mohammedan. You need not be a Jain or a Sikh. Trust is a commitment between the individual and the whole. Trust makes you religious. Not Hindu, not Mohammedan, not Christian. Simply religious. Trust has no name. Belief makes you Hindu, Mohammedan, Christian. Belief has names, millions of names. There are thousands of beliefs. You can choose. Trust has only one quality. Quality of surrender into the whole. Quality of moving in accord with the whole. Quality of not forcing the whole to follow you, but simply allowing yourself to move with the whole. Trust is a transformation. Belief is given by the birth. Trust has to be attained. Nobody is born in trust. Everybody is born in belief. You are born a Hindu, or a Jain, or a Buddha. Belief is given by the society, because belief is the bridge between you and the society. If the society doesn't give you a belief, there is fear. You may become rebellious. In fact, it is certain. If the belief is not given, you will become rebellious. And the society doesn't want that, can't afford that. The society, before you become aware, gives you deep beliefs. In your blood it goes. With the milk of your mother, the poison of belief seeps into your being. By the time you become aware what has happened, you already find you are a Hindu, or a Mohammedan, or a Christian. The straight jacket is already there. You are imprisoned. And it is very difficult to get out of it, because it gets into your unconscious. It becomes your very foundation. Even if you get out of it, even if you go against it, it will remain in the foundation, because to cleanse the unconscious is very difficult. Consciously you can do it. I have heard it happened. Mullah Nasruddin became an atheist. And he was dying. And the priest came. And the priest said, "Mullah, now this is the last moment and the last opportunity. Still there is time left. You confess your sin, and you confess that you went wrong by becoming an atheist. Become a theist and die believing in God. Mullah Nasruddin opened his eyes and said, "Thank God I am not a theist." Even if you are not a theist, you will thank God. Deep down it remains in the unconscious, it becomes a foundation. Whatsoever you have learned in your childhood before the age of 7 has become your foundation. To uproot it, very great effort in meditation is needed. You will have to move back. Only then it can be wiped out. You can create anti beliefs that they won't help, they cannot help. You can become a theist, you can be a Hindu in your childhood, then you can be converted to a Christian. You will remain a Hindu. Your Christianity will be colored by your Hinduism. You may become a communist, but deep down the unconscious is there. It will color your communism. A deep meditation is needed to cleanse the unconscious. Trust is totally different. Trust is not in words, in scriptures. Trust is towards life. The very energy that moves the whole. You trust it and you float with it. If it takes you down in the will, you go down in the will. If it takes you out in the will, you come out in the will. You move with it. You don't have your own mind about it. If it makes you sad, you become sad. If it makes you happy, you become happy. You simply move with it, with no mind of yours. And suddenly you come to realize that now you have achieved a point where bliss is going to be eternal. In your sadness also then you will be blissful. Because it is none of your business. The whole is doing that way. And you are moving with it. Happiness, okay. Sadness, okay. You simply okay. Everything is okay. This is what a religious man is. He has no mind of his own. Belief has a very strong mind of its own. It is said about a great saint, Tulsidas, that he was invited in a Krishna temple in Mathura, and he was a believer in Ram. He went there, but he will not bow down because the statue was of Krishna with a flute on the lips. It is said that he said to Krishna that I can bow down only to Rama. So if you want me to bow down, you take the bow of Rama in your hands. When I will see that you have become Rama, only then I will bow down. This is the mind of belief. Otherwise, what is the distinction between Rama and Krishna? And what is the distinction between a flute and the bow? And the story goes on. It says that the statue changed. It became the statue of Rama. And then Tulsidas bowed down very happily. Now the problem is, what must have happened? My understanding is that the statue must have remained the same. Because statues don't bother. They don't bother whether you bow down or not. But the mind of a believer can create things. Tulsidas must have projected. It must have been a projection. It must have been a hallucination. He must have seen. That is certain. He must have seen, otherwise he would not have bowed down, that certain. The possibility is that his own mind created. And when you are too much filled with belief, you can create. You can see things which are not there. And you can miss things which are there. A mind that is filled with belief is a mind which can project anything according to the belief. When you see things, always remember this. People come to me. If somebody is a believer in Krishna and he meditates, immediately Krishna starts coming to him. Visions. But Christ never comes to him. A Christian starts meditation, Krishna never disturbs his meditation. Only Christ comes. To a Mohammedan, neither Krishna nor Christ. And Muhammad cannot come because Mohammedans have no pictures of Muhammad. They don't know how he looked like. So they cannot project. Whatsoever you believe, you project. Belief is a projection. It is just like a projector in a movie film house. You see something on the screen which is not there, and the projector is hidden behind. You never look at the projector. You look at the screen, the projector is at the back, and the whole game is going there. But you look at the screen. The whole game is going in your mind. And a mind filled with belief always goes on projecting things in the world. He sees things which are not there. So this is the problem. And this mind who believes is always vulnerable and always an opportunity to be exploited by the cheaters. And the cheaters are all around. The whole path is filled with robbers. Because no map exists. Moving into religion is moving into the uncharted, into the unmapped. Robbers can flourish very easily there. They can wait for you. And they are waiting. And sometimes, even if the person is not deceiving you, you want to be deceived. Then you will be deceived. Nobody can deceive you if deep down you are not ready to be deceived. Just a few days before, a man came to me. And he said, a Baba has deceived me. And he is a great yogi. And what he has done, I asked him. He said, he can make gold out of any metal. And he has showed me. And I have seen it happening with my own eyes. And then he said, that bring all your gold and I will make it tenfold. So I collected all my ornaments and he has simply escaped with them. He has deceived me. And everybody will think that he has deceived, but I told this man that it is your greed that has deceived you. Don't throw the responsibility on anybody else. You are simply foolish. And greed is foolish. You wanted your ornaments to be made tenfold. That mind has deceived you. The other person has simply used the opportunity. He is just a clever person, that's all. You are the real problem. And if he had not deceived you, somebody else would have deceived. So that is not the question, who deceives. If you are ready. This has been my observation, that if somebody deceives you, it shows a certain proneness in you to be deceived. And if somebody can lie to you, it means you have a certain affinity with lies. A man of truth cannot be deceived. A man who lives in truth cannot become a victim of liars. Only a liar can be deceived by another liar. Otherwise, there is no possibility. Millions of people are there who are ready to be deceived, who are simply waiting somebody to come and deceive them. Because of their beliefs and because of their wishes, desires, because of their greed. And remember well that greed is greed. Whether it exists in the material world or in the spiritual makes no difference. The quality of it remains the same. You would like somebody to make your gold tenfold. This is greed. Then somebody says, I will make you an enlightened person. And you fall in line immediately. That too is greed. And I tell you, it is possible to make gold tenfold very easily. It is almost impossible to make any other person enlightened. Because that is no game. The path is arduous. And in fact, nobody ever makes you enlightened. You yourself become enlightened. The other may be a catalytic agent at the most. Nothing more. But in fact, everything happens within you. The other's presence may have helped. That's all. But if you are really sincere, even that is not needed. And if you are sincere, those who can help will seek you. If you are insincere, you will seek those who can harm. That is the difference. When a disciple seeks a master, it is almost always going to be something wrong. When a master seeks a disciple, only then something authentic is going to happen. How can you seek the master? And whatsoever you will think will be your mind. And you are completely ignorant. You are a sleepwalker. You will seek somebody according to you. You will be the criterion. Then you will go and seek somebody who is doing a miracle. You may go and seek Satya Sai Baba. Because that will be a deep fulfillment of your greed. And you will see, here is the man. If he can produce things out of air, he can do anything. Now your greed is provoked. Now a deep affinity happens immediately. That's why you will see thousands of people around Satya Sai Baba. If a Buddha exists, you will not see multitudes there. Because there is no affinity. Satya Sai Baba has an appeal deep inside you. Your greed is provoked. Now you know this is the right man. But you are wrong. How can you decide who is the right man? You create your deceivers. You give them opportunity. You follow magicians, not masters. If you really want to seek a master, drop greed and drop your beliefs. Go to a master completely nude in the mind, with no beliefs, as if a tree in the fall with no leaves, naked, standing against the sky. You go and seek a master with a naked mind, with no leaves, with no beliefs. Only then, I say, you will be able to see without projection. And only then, something in your life penetrates from the above, then nobody can deceive you. So don't be bothered and don't condemn the deceivers. They fulfill a need. Because you need them, they are there. Nothing exists without any cause. People exist all around you because you need them. Thieves exist, robbers exist, exploiters exist, deceivers exist because you need them. You will be nowhere if they all disappear. You will be simply unable to live your life if they are not there. This story is beautiful and has to be understood deeply. There was a monk who called himself the Master of Silence. Actually, he was a fraud and had no genuine understanding. But you can pretend, and in religion you can pretend more than anywhere else. Because people are clever in their worldly ways and they are completely innocent as far as religion is concerned. You may be able to know everything that goes on in the market. You have lived there. You know the tricks and the ways and everything. You have yourself been doing those things. You are wise as far as the world is concerned. But when you move into the world of a monastery, from the market to the monastery, there is a great difference. In the monastery, you are completely innocent like a child. You may be very old, 60, 70 years of age, but for a monastery, in a temple, you are just like a small child. You have not lived there. And the same things exist there also. Again, it is a market. When Jesus entered the temple of Jerusalem, he entered with a whip and he started beating people. Because many shopkeepers have entered the temple. And many money lenders. He turned upside down their tables. And he said one thing. He said, "You have made my God's temple a market. You traders, you get out." And this is really something. One single man. And the whole crowd of traders escaped out. Because truth has a strength of its own. When it is true, you immediately become weak because you are a liar. You immediately understand that's right. Those shopkeepers didn't fight. Those money lenders could have killed Jesus. He was alone. And there were many. But simply the truth of it. They escaped out. And only when they reached out, then they started planning what to do with this man. And it was their planning that finally crucified Jesus. in the monasteries, in the temples, in the ashramas, another world exists. You don't know the laws of it, the rules of the game. You can be deceived there very, very easily. And pretenders abound. Because it is so easy. This has been my feeling, that towards religion, two types of people move. One is the man who has lived in the world, lived it through and through, and has come to understand that it is futile, useless, wastage of life. It is just like a dream, and that too, not a beautiful dream, but a nightmare. This is the one type, the genuine type, the authentic, who has lived through the world and found it useless, a desert with no oasis in it, and has turned away. His turning is total. He will not look back. There is nothing to look back. Buddha used to ask his disciples, have you really turned completely? Or you would like to have a little mind always looking back, a part of you always looking back? This is the first type who is really genuine, who has lived the world and found it just a frustration. That's why he has moved towards religion. Then there is another type which is completely opposite to this. Those people are attracted very much towards religion. The first type 1%, the second type 99%. The other type are those people who couldn't succeed in the world, who couldn't succeed in their ambitions, who could not become important. They would have liked to become prime ministers and presidents, but they couldn't. They were simply not made that strong to fight there. People who would have liked to become Rockefellers are Fords, but could not because the competition was too much. And they were not made in a right strong metal. They were lacking, because life is a struggle. They were simply inferior. They didn't have that much intelligence or that kind of strength to fight through and to fulfill their ambitions. These people also turn towards religion. These are the great deceivers. They will become the problem for the religion and for people who seek religion. And they will be the deceivers all around the temple. They will make the temple a trade house. Because their desires are still there lurking, they have turned to religion as politicians. Of course, politicians who have failed in politics. You go all over the country, everywhere around gurus you will find politicians who have failed. Ex-ministers will always be found reaching to some guru. People who wanted too much in the world and couldn't get it, they turn towards religion because there things are easier. Competition is not much. And you can pretend and you can believe in yourself easily that you are a very superior being. And there is no competition. You can simply say that I have become enlightened. And nobody can deny it. And nobody can disprove it. There exists simply no criterion to judge it. And you can find always foolish people to follow you. Even a Muktanand can get followers. Once I passed Muktanand's ashram, and just to see what is happening there, I went in. And I have never seen such an ordinary man becoming a great religious leader of people. No potential, no achievement, no insight. If you see him walking in the street, you will not recognize that there is something. Just plain ordinary, and not ordinary in the sense of Zen. Just plain ordinary. But even he can find followers in the world. Millions of fools exist. And they are always ready to believe, always ready, ready to fall in the trap of anybody. And in fact, sometimes there is no trap at all, but they fall. And they would like to believe that something is happening. Man is so imaginative. And because of the imagination, he starts believing that something is happening. And these people know at least this much what to do. Somebody comes to me and says that I have a certain pain in my backbone. Now, if I say that this is simply a pain and you go to a doctor, he simply turns away from me and never comes. Because he had not come for that. He had come for an approval. And if I say, yes, your kundalini is rising, he is happy. These fools always will find their muktanands. Just, and not very ordinary people, sometimes very intelligent people. Just few days before, a film producer came to me. A very well-known name all over India. His blood sugar has gone beyond all ordinary limits. It has reached to 500. He must be dead by now, really. A drunkard and a great food eater, obsessed with eating. Still he continues eating sweets and drinking alcohol, and the continues. Now, because of so much blood sugar, his whole body is trembling. Has to, because this is such... His whole body is ill, every fiber of it is ill. And there is a deep trembling inside. And he was sitting when I was talking to others, and he was trembling. And then he asked me, that what do you think? What it is? Is it kundalini rising? Now what to do with these people? These are the victims. And these are the participants of creating deceivers. They are also half responsible. And I know this man also belongs to Muktanand's group. Now the problem arises for me, what to do? If I say, yes, it is Kundalini rising and this is your last life, soon, within days, you will be enlightened. He will bow down, touch my feet, will go very, very happy. He will be happy, I will be happy, and everything is settled. And he will go around talking about me that this is the right, the greatest master I have come to know. It is a good business, simple. But then I am deceiving him. And not only deceiving, I am killing him. I am a murderer. Because I know he is dying of diabetes. And the diabetes has gone beyond all limits. And if I say this is Kundalini and enlightenment is coming, and this is like Samadhi, that's why you are trembling. It is God descending you. Or you are rising towards the divine, or the divine is descending in you. He will be very happy, everybody is happy and there is no problem, and he will work for me until he dies. He will go on telling. And the moment I said that this is nothing to do with any enlightenment, this is a simple, too much sugar in the blood, your whole body is feverish, you don't waste time, you go to the doctors and listen to them, immediately I could see the change in his face. It changed. This man is not a master at all. How can I be a master and enlightened when I cannot understand such a simple phenomenon that is happening in him? It actually happened. A man very much known in the West, Franklin Jones, was a disciple of Muktananda. And then his Kundalini arose and Muktananda approved that you have become a Siddha. Not only approved, he has given a written certificate. I simply cannot believe what foolishnesses go on. Certificate that you have become a Siddha, enlightened. So of course the man became. He changed his name. He was Franklin Jones, now he is Baba Firi Jones. And he has many followers of his own. Now the trouble came in. Because he became so much enlightened, as Muktananda never expected. And he has become a guru in his own right. Now he came again a few months before, and now he wanted another certificate. Now he wanted that there is no need for me to belong to any master because now I am a master myself. And my karmas with you, with Muktananda, are fulfilled. So give me a certificate that I am absolutely free. Now Muktananda hesitated. This is going too much. So he denied. He will not give another certificate. But the things had gone already too far away. The man returned back, wrote a book, and said that, of course, Muktananda helped me a little on my way. But he is not an enlightened man. And I dissolve all my links with him. He is an ordinary man. And this is how things go. He was an enlightened man because he gave the certificate. He was the greatest master in the world. Now he is no more an ordinary man, and I dissolve all my links with him. these things go on. Remember this. Because you can become a part in such a game yourself. Never believe in yourself too much. Remain aware. You come to me and I will say exactly what is happening. And many have gone from me because I will not support their egos. And I will not fulfill their wishes. And I will not say what they wanted me to say. And once they go away, they are against me. They have to be. These are the traps. Not only that the deceivers create them, you help them to create. Don't be a participant in any deception. Be very, very alert. This monk, who was a fraud and had no genuine understanding, called himself the master of silence. That's very beautiful, because if you utter something, you can be caught. It is simply beautiful to remain silent. Then nobody can catch you. They say it is good for two persons to be silent. The very, very wise has to be silent, because what he knows cannot be said, and the very, very foolish, because if he is not silent, he will be caught. So this man, who was a fraud, used to call himself the master of silence. He will not utter a single word. But if you don't utter, you cannot sell anything. If a salesman is silent, how you will sell things? So he devised. To sell his humbug Zen, he had two eloquent attendant monks to answer questions for him. But as if to show his inscrutable silent Zen, he himself never uttered a word. One day, during the absence of his two attendants, a pilgrim came to him and asked, "Master, what is the Buddha?" This is one of the Zen questions. It means, what is dharma? What is religion? It means, what is awareness? It means, what is awakened being? It is one of the most fundamental questions in Jain. What is the Buddha? What is that utterly enlightened state of being we call Buddha? Not knowing what to do or how to answer, he looked desperately around in all directions for his missing mouthpieces. The pilgrim, apparently pleased and satisfied, thanked the master and set out again on his journey. On the road, the pilgrim met the two attendant monks on their way home. He began telling them enthusiastically what an enlightened being this master of silence is. He projected, of course. He must have heard that those who know, they remain silent. He must have read in the scriptures. It is said millions of times, one who knows never says. One who says has not known yet. But these are very, very paradoxical things. Lao Tzu says in the very beginning of Tao Te Ching, truth cannot be uttered, and that which can be uttered is not true. But Lao Tzu uttered this, so what to think about it? whether it is true or not. Because it is a uttered word. It has been said. Now you will be in a very deep trouble. Lao Tse says that truth cannot be said, but this much he is saying. So whether this saying is true or not, if it is not true, that will mean truth can be uttered. If it is true, then even this cannot be uttered. Religion is full of paradoxes. And that's the problem. This man must have read many Zen masters saying that truth cannot be said. This is right, truth cannot be said. But this much can be said, and many things can be said. Millions of things can be said which will be helpful to find that which cannot be said. Many things can be indicated. And that which cannot be said at least can be sowed. The whole meaning is only this. The truth is greater than the words. It is greater than the silence also. Truth is so vast, it cannot be forced in the capsule of words, and it cannot be forced in silence also. In fact, silence exists in truth, and words also exist in truth. Truth is the very sky, the very space. But this master did a trick. Thinking that truth cannot be said, that is the best way to keep silent. But then no one will be attracted to you. So he had two attendants to talk about mouthpieces. And that is a good arrangement, because if they say something wrong, he is not involved. If they something say right, so far so good. But one day he was caught. You can deceive people for a time being, but you cannot deceive people forever. Someday, somewhere, you will be caught. You cannot make an arrangement of lies which can go on forever and forever. The truth will erupt. 99% you may succeed, but 1% you will fail, and that 1% will draw the whole success to failure. It will destroy the whole thing. One day, a pilgrim came and asked, "What is the Buddha?" The master looked this way and that, in all directions, desperately for his missing mouthpieces. This was the truth. He had no answer to give. And looking in all directions, he was looking for something else. Not for truth, not for Buddha. Not to indicate by the gesture anything, but the pilgrim projected. He's looking in all directions. The pilgrim thought, he is really a Zen master, a great master. He will not utter by words, but he is sowing that you can look in every dimension, in every direction. You will not find Buddha there. Because the Buddha is in. You can seek and search and you will not find. Because he is in the seeker itself. This was the projection. And that is what you can do easily. And that's how people are deceived. Because they have their own minds and beliefs and concepts and theories and they project. Many times it has happened to me. People project. One man came. He came with a bag. I didn't know what he's having in the bag. He touched my feet. And the bag was in his hand. So the bag also touched my feet. I thought it is just accidental. But the man was having a bottle with water in it, inside the bag. And it was not accidental. He wanted to touch the bottle, my feet. And I am completely unaware of what he is doing. And then after a few days, he came and he thanked me. And he was very, very grateful. He said, "You cured my illness." "What illness?" "I don't know your illness." He said, "I had a severe headache for many years. A sort of migraine. And the water I had brought last time I came. And you touched it by your feet." I said, "I never touched by my feet." He said, "Whatsoever is the case, I touched the bottle and I drank it for a few days and the headache is completely gone. Now what to do?" If I say this is simply your own magic, you have done it, it is a auto-hypnosis, then there is possibility the headache may come back. Because you cannot believe in yourself, you always believe in somebody. You cannot believe in yourself. And if you cannot believe in yourself, how can you believe in anybody? But this goes on. Impotent you feel inside, you cannot believe in yourself, you seek somebody. And through somebody's belief, your magic, your own auto-hypnosis starts working. This man is cured. In the first place, his headache must have been created by himself. Because a real headache cannot be cured in such ways. A false headache. A psychological. In the first place, the headache was a hypnosis. In the second place, now he has cured it. But this man is dangerous. Because if you can create headache, you can create cancer. Projecting things. Once it happened, a man stayed with me. And we were sleeping in the same room. In the night, I must have gone to the toilet. And he must have been very sleepy, half awake, half asleep. So he looked at my bed and I was not there. He must have fallen asleep for a few seconds. Then I came and he must have looked again and I was there. So he thought that for those few seconds I disappeared. He jumped out of the bed, caught my legs and said, "Just tell me you have done the miracle. But tell me how you did it. And now I will never leave you. You are the right master." So I told him, "It is okay. you will not leave me, but at least give me a chance also whether I would like you to be with me always or not. Because you are simply a fool. And the man will say, no, you don't try to escape. I'm not going to leave you. I have seen the miracle. For this I was waiting. I will choose the master who can disappear. And you have done it. And I have seen it with my own eyes. Mind is a very subtle game. You can hear things I'm not saying. You can go through things I'm not doing. You can deceive yourself. So it is not necessary that somebody should deceive you. You can deceive yourself. You are a self-deceiver. The man looking at this silent master desperately all around thought that this is the right man, a great enlightened man, indicating that the Buddha cannot be found anywhere, satisfied, well pleased. He thanked the master and set out again on his journey. On the road, the pilgrim met the attendant monks on their way home. He began telling them enthusiastically what an enlightened being this master of silence is. He said, I asked him what Buddha is, and he immediately turned his face to the east and to the west, implying that human beings are always looking for Buddha here and there. But actually, Buddha is not to be found in any such directions. Ah, what an enlightened master he is, and how profound his teaching. When the attendant monks returned, the master of silence scolded them thus, where have you been all this time? A while ago, I was embarrassed to death and almost ruined by an inquisitive pilgrim. This story, I remember well, because it can be your story also on the path. And this should not be so. This story should not become your story. I am telling these stories and talking about them to make you aware of certain things. I love these stories because they indicate so simply and so directly and so immediately to certain phenomena which are possible for every pilgrim on the path. How to avoid so that you are not deceived. Nothing can be done about the deceivers. What can you do? They are there. And the whole allows them also, so it is so far good. You cannot do anything about the deceivers. So don't be worried. Let them to be themselves. But something you can do about yourself, that is the point. I don't want you to become revolutionaries and go and hunt babas. No. Leave them to themselves. I am telling you not to become revolutionaries, but to become more aware, so that such things don't happen to you. That's all. Babas will continue. Always and always, because fools are there and they will need them. They fulfill a particular need. So what is to be done? You can do only one thing. You drop that need within you. Don't project. Don't allow beliefs to settle in your mind. Clean the mind every day as one cleans the house. As dust gathers in the whole day, by the evening you clean it. Again in the morning, in the night you have done nothing, but even dust in the night settles again. In the morning you again clean. Continuously clean your mind of beliefs, concepts, theories, ideas, ideologies, philosophies, doctrines, scriptures. You simply clean your mind of verbal chattering and you try to look at reality without any mind inside. Just look, a pure look, stare naked. Tilopa says stare naked and Mahamudra will be yours. You will attain to the highest enlightenment possible to human consciousness. Stare naked. Let your eyes be clean of all concepts. Then the reality will be revealed to you. Because you will not distort it. And you will not project it. And you will not put anything into it. What this pilgrim did, he had some ideas. He has put those ideas in the gesture of the master who was looking all around for his mouthpieces. In that situation he has put his own ideas. He must have read somewhere that the Buddha cannot be found in any directions. That is projected. Don't be a projector. Don't be an active mind. Let your mind be completely passive, receptive. Don't bring anything from the mind into the reality, otherwise you will distort it. Simply allow the reality to enter the mind and you be a passive watcher, a passive witness. Then whatsoever is the case, you will know. Then that which is will be revealed to you. And only that can lead you to maturity, to growth, and to the final flowering. Drop the mind if you want to know the real. Put aside the mind if you want to penetrate into the truth. The truth is always there. But your mind is standing just in between. Put aside the mind. Make a window. And look. And everything, the very mystery of life, becomes unveiled before you. With the mind, nobody has ever been able to know the truth. Without the mind, anybody can know the truth. Because the mind is the only barrier. The mind must cease for the truth to be. And you have nothing else but mind. Difficult, very difficult to put it aside. Arduous. But it happens if you go on trying. In the beginning, only few seconds glimpses will be there. But even those will give you a new dimension. For seconds, mind stops. Suddenly, as if there is a lightning. And the whole world of the mind disappears. And the world of the real is revealed. These lightnings will happen to you. And then by and by, you get settled into the state of no mind. then there is no need for lightning. The sun has arisen. And now it is the morning. All darkness disappears. A religious person is a person of no mind, no belief. A religious person is a person of trust. Enough for today.